My name is Paloma, and you are listening to WGXC ACRA 90.7 FM.
Well, hello there. I am Neva Wartell, host of Music for the Masses, inviting you to join me every Sunday from 1 to 3 in the afternoon on an excursion of sound and rhythm, where we discover how much amazing music comes from places in the world you may be familiar with, or you've wondered about, or maybe never even heard of. Music for the Masses comes to you live from Catskill every Sunday from 1 to 3 p.m. only on listener-supported, solar-powered, community-based radio for open ears, open minds, and open hearts. 90.7 FM and WGXC.org. Suitable for the avid globehopper and armchair traveler alike. You might want to pack a map and a sandwich.
Hi everyone, it's Lily, the youth peer leader from Mental Health Association of Columbia Green County's Clubhouse. Are you a teen wanting to learn more about health education? Maybe you're looking to complete your volunteer hours or in need of a job. The weekly teen clinic on Wednesdays from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. at Family Planning, located on the third floor of the county building on Main Street in Catskill, can help you answer any of your questions. Information can be found at greengovernment.com. Hope to see you there.
Wave Farms WGXC is made possible in part by the generous support of Nick Pease of East Hampton, New York. WGXC supporters care deeply about creative community radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
I hear music. I don't hear you. I don't hear anything now. Oh, wait, I hear us now. Hi, everybody. Good evening. I'm in Greenville, so hello. Okay, bye.
All right.
Hello.
All right. So, Casey, let's introduce the show.
All right. Good evening. You're listening to the Capital District Democratic Socialist Good Time Hour on WGXC ACRA 90.7 on your FM dial. I am one of your hosts, Casey, calling from Greenville today. And I'm here with my under not so deep cover co-host, Poche Noir.
All right. We're trying to make the technology work. Casey, is it working on the radio for you there?
Let me see. Let me mute myself.
Hello, hello, hello. Is it coming through?
Yes, it is. Awesome. I hear myself loud and clear.
Okay, very good. So, bonsoir, comrades. It's 7 p.m. on the first Tuesday of the month. So this is August 5th of 2025. Or in the French Republican calendar, this is the 18th day of the month of Thermidor in the year 233, a day represented by the almond tree in the French Republican calendar, native to the Middle East. And that intro was the 1998 smash hit, I'll call it a smash hit, by the Manic Street Preachers. If you tolerate this, your children will be next. And it's about fighting fascists in the Spanish Civil War. If you go to the website for the show on WGXC, you'll see a little poster from the Spanish Civil War there.
Oh, cool. Yeah, so that's a really cool song. And that's a really cool thing that this day, 18th day of the month of Thermidor in the year 233, is represented by. The almond tree.
You know what I like about the month of Thermidor is that Thermidor is when the, let's say, the right-wing reaction to the French Revolution took place, right, and throwing the Jacobins out of power. So if you see somebody going a little overboard, you can always say, can't we have a more Thermidorian solution than that? And then you give those people a kind of a backhanded slap about being overboard and stuff like that. So that's why I like the word Thermidor, and that's why I actually like the month of Thermidor, except for the fact that historically I don't like it. What do you think about that?
I'm confused about what you don't like historically about Thermidor, I guess. Oh, I see. Never mind.
Because that's where the reaction against the French Revolution
yes.
took place to stabilize things.
My brain couldn't separate Thermidor from August. So I was like, what's wrong with the month of August? But you were speaking about Thermidor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the same page as you.
Okay.
So anyway, standard disclaimer about our show. Remarks made tonight reflect the opinions of whomever may be speaking them and not of WGXC. Also, these remarks need not reflect the opinions of anyone else in the Democratic Socialist of America. It is just Poche Noir and myself talking.
Okay. And
gassing,
that's
if
right.
you will.
Gassing, you say?
Gossing. Gossiping.
Gossing?
Gabbing.
Okay.
Either one.
Okay.
Gassing, why not?
All right. Well, if you took part in any DSA meetings and you attended them, you'd see a lot of differences of opinion between members as well as agreements. I would say, especially in light of our last general meeting, it has a lot of nuances.
Yes, indeed. Which I think is really special. I think we all can learn and grow. And we always try to be really civil in our meetings, even though in reference to that recent discussion, we recognize that the concept of civility as popularly expressed is often misused to maintain like a really evil status quo. Civility in the DSA context means something quite different. We often use it as being mindful of and avoiding conduct that may diminish the comradeship and solidarity amongst DSA members.
Okay. So really there is no line to be towed by members of the DSA. We just all try to work for what would be a fairer world or in society. To be a DSA member, you do not have to be a strict. Hold it. That's a little low because we got the FaceTime going here. Marxist like me. So here's another historical note. On today's date in 1981, Casey, I don't even think you were even an idea yet. You were in the netherworld.
I absolutely was not an idea yet.
Okay. On that particular day, Ronald Reagan fired 11,000 striking air traffic controllers from the union, the PATCO union, and then decertified the union, which, if you hang out with boomers like me, some of them think that it was a lost opportunity for a general strike in this country.
You know what's incredible, though? I mean, everything comes back to Reagan, it seems, in this late-stage capitalism. Mm-hmm. But in this late... So growing up, my dad, and I'm so sorry if you're listening to this, Dad, I bet you every dollar in my wallet he's not. Love you. But he loved Reagan. And in the past, like, 3 years, he started to accept that Reagan is... quite possibly like one of the worst things that happened to America. And I think, you know, that's an exciting little development in my world.
So how do you appreciate that he came to that?
I think it's hard to say because the 80s, if you were a straight white man who was like middle class, was a really good time to be alive. Like, specifically under those conditions.
Well, you're quite describing me. Except that I was sometimes living in a squat.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. I just think, like, people have a lot of rose-colored glasses. I mean, it's the reason, and this is, like, fully a hot take that I have nothing to back up with, but I think so many hippies from, like, the late 60s, early 70s went on to become, like, these Reagan conservatives. Mm-hmm. Because of just like the massive growth of like their pockets in that era at the behest of many people. But I think now, you know, 30 years later, mm-hmm. we're feeling like the deep effects of this heinous idea of trickle-down economics. And like, there's kind of no way to not look the bull in the eye mm-hmm. in that regard. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure having a incredibly obnoxious socialist daughter didn't help.
I don't think your dad thinks you're obnoxious.
No, I know he absolutely loves me and respects my opinion, but I recognize that in my political education and coming to it, you know, like 21-year-old me was incredibly loud. With a lot of opinions that weren't quite fully formed.
I have always known that silence is golden.
So I've heard.
I've always known that. So, now we've criticized Ronald Reagan, but you have to give the devil his due. I am going to play his address in 1981 of August 3rd. Of 1981, which was calendar-wise, you know, so many years before this, a couple of days ago. And you will hear how masterfully he did this. I'm going to play it right now. So I think I'm going to have to hang up on you momentarily to play this.
Why don't you try to mute yourself on FaceTime?
Aha.
Let's see if that works.
All right, let me see if that works.
Okay.
Now I'm muted. Let's try this.
This morning at 7 a.m., the union representing those who man America's air traffic control facilities called a strike. This was the culmination of 7 months of negotiations between the Federal Aviation Administration and the union. At one point in these negotiations, agreement was reached and signed by both sides, granting a $40 million increase in salaries and benefits. This is twice what other government employees can expect. It was granted in recognition of the difficulties inherent in the work these people perform. Now, however, the union demands are 17 times what had been agreed to, $681 million. This would impose a tax burden on their fellow citizens, which is unacceptable. I would like to thank the supervisors and controllers who are on the job today helping to get the nation's air system operating safely. In the New York area, for example, four supervisors were scheduled to report for work, and 17 additionally volunteered. At National Airport, a traffic controller told a news person he had resigned from the union and reported to work because, quote, how can I ask my kids to obey the law if I don't, end quote. This is a great tribute to America. Let me make one thing plain. I respect the right of workers in the private sector to strike. Indeed, as president of my own union, I led the first strike ever called by that union. I guess I'm maybe the first one to ever hold this office who is a lifetime member of an AFL-CIO union. But we cannot compare labor-management relations in the private sector with government. Government cannot close down the assembly line. It has to provide without interruption the protective services which are government's reason for being. It was in recognition of this that the Congress passed a law forbidding strikes by government employees against the public safety. Let me read the solemn oath taken by each of these employees, the sworn affidavit when they accepted their jobs. I am not participating in any strike against the government of the United States or any agency thereof, and I will not so participate while an employee of the government of the United States or any agency thereof. It is for this reason that I must tell those who fail to report for duty this morning, they are in violation of the law, and if they do not report for work within 48 hours, they have forfeited their jobs and will be terminated.
So, what do you think about that? Casey, oh, hold it, let me unmute. So, Casey, what do you think about that?
Well, I only, there's a lag live, so I didn't finish it, but I don't know what to make of that.
It's good. It's good. He even references how he was the president of the Screen Actors Guild.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I, of course, should have assumed that. I mean, he's a very famous actor. I was just surprised to hear it, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know what to make of that. What do you make of it? What is your analysis?
Like I say, rhetorically, it's terrific. Right? It's short. It's sweet. And it explain it's just terrific rhetoric to get your point across. So let me play for you right now the union heads, the union president's reply or an address in the middle of the strike. He decertified, he just broke the union.
So this was his speech about why he fired the 11,000.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
okay.
He said, you're going to get 48 hours. Show up to work in 48 hours.
It just feels like really, like, the banality of evil, almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, play the president.
So, this is a guy named Robert Poley. And, of course, it's from that same strike. And I don't think I'm going to have to mute you. I think I can work something on the board where if we remain tacit, we keep quiet, everybody will be able to hear it. I'll just turn up this little yellow lever here.
I want to talk to you tonight about one thing. I want to talk to you tonight about one thing. Your total resolve. When I talked to you in the past, many times I told you that you must prepare yourself if the necessity arose for us to go on strike. That you must be prepared for them to throw everything in the world that they could throw at you. Come at you with bad press, with intimidation, in an attempt to break this strike. I'm proud to say that you listened and you listened well. They have done that, and they have not buckled you one inch. We are still as strong as we were the first day of this strike, and our total commitment to a survivable occupation remains the same. I know that these times are difficult, and you stop and you wonder as to where we are. Where we are right now is in a position where they are finally realizing through the press, through the Congress, and through concerned citizens, the flying public, that this system is unsafe. Today, I have been summoned to testify before Congress on Friday on the safety of the air traffic control system. The FAA and the DOT will also have to testify to respond as to what is really happening in this system. They are now realizing that this system cannot operate without the 12,000 professional air traffic controllers who make this system work. We knew that they would come to their senses. We knew that they would have to realize that they need you to operate this system. We know we are justified in our demands, and on a continual basis, I am getting more indications that the public and everyone else realizes that this is a just cause and our demands are just. I talked today with the general president of the AFL-CIO, Lane Kirkland. He advised me that all of his calls and the responses that he has received are starting to change dramatically with the people realizing that PATCO was correct in what they were asking for. He also stated to me that his office will give total support to the 12,000 men and women who are striking for a just contract. Brothers and sisters, we will prevail. I know, as you know, that it was going to be difficult. We never thought that it would be a cakewalk. We knew that our employer had the full resources of the government, the FBI, the Justice Department, to try to intimidate us. We were prepared, and we did not buckle. I can't tell you how much that I'm proud to be your president and proud of each and every one of you every time a trade unionist in this town comes up to me and says that you must have the best people in the labor movement to represent. Brothers and sisters, hang in there. We will win and we will prevail. Poli.
You still there, Casey? So,
yeah.
All right. So that was Robert Poli, the president of PATCO. And I find
can you give me a little bit of historical context? Because
I will. Let me lay that on you.
Okay, so, please. Thank you.
Nobody in the very few, I should say, I don't know if nobody, but the AFL-CIO generally did not support Ronald Reagan. The only in his election bid, the only union that I know of that supported Ronald Reagan was PATCO. And then he goes and does this. So naturally, I don't think the other unions were going to go and back these people. It's like, you're going to lie in the bed that you made. And you talk about, and then Robert Poli talks about speaking to Lane Kirkland. I mean, it's just a real misestimation of that particular union and maybe the union leadership in general of how their way of doing things had their kind of business unionism was not working. I mean, even though this was a strike, the only way they would have won that strike is by getting more broad support and other people going on strike too.
Yeah, which, hence the general strike. I'm confused. I guess on a general sense, because it's illegal for federal employees to strike. So then, I don't understand. I don't understand that, frankly, because striking is one of the points of negotiation and power that unions have.
You would think anybody has the natural right to strike. And if people have, let's say, the right to free assembly, they are right to strike together.
It feels codified in our constitution.
There are constitutions in other nations where they construe the right of, let's say, free assembly as the right for unionism. But that's not our country.
No, that's not.
Yeah, that's not ours. Well,
so he fired everybody.
Well, some people did go back to work, but not enough.
Yeah, what was the impact on the air traffic system?
Oh, as I recall at the time, I was 21 at the time. It was very hectic and it was very, very dangerous. That's my recollection. At least that's my recollection of the news reportage at the time. But I think that probably Reagan being a new president and his terrific speechwriter, that won the day. Despite the fact that it was a nasty thing to do.
It was, yeah. God, what a bleak time of conscience.
You know?
Between everything going on in the 80s, Jesus.
All right. But on the other hand, let's bring it up a little bit. It seems that the nurses at Albany Med have got a terrific contract.
Yes, they had a planned picket, and that got canceled as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm, because it seems that the boss is kindly buckled.
Yeah, which is incredible, and also just like shows how powerful a union and like solidarity can be. Shout out to our labor committee and like many others who have been out on the streets collecting signatures on the ground, organizing around.
And you know what? Julian did. He did a FOIL request for the Department of Health to find out how many staffing violations that Albany Med had. So that was, I think, maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And the union picked up on that.
That's so cool.
That is very cool.
Yeah. Julian is just the tops. That's truly it. Just the tops. Well, should we do a little tunes?
There's one other thing I just want to mention with regard to PATCO.
Of course.
And that is this. This is from the Times of 4 days ago. Appeals court allows Trump order that ends union protections for federal workers. So it keeps continuing. Started with PATCO, and now it seems that federal workers are not going to be able to collectively bargain at all. Unless, of course, we do something about it.
2028.
There you go.
Unfortunately, we don't have... It's 2025, so we can do something now. I'm referring to a collective effort towards a general strike.
Yep.
Wow, that sucks though.
Okay, I'm going to play a song now. And I think it's appropriate. Let's see.
Okay.
What else should I say? Everyone is gay. What else could I write? I don't have the right. What else should I be? All apologies. All in all is all we are. All in all.
Okay. You still there, Casey? Am I?
I am. Sorry. I was enjoying listening to the song.
Yeah, that's a terrific version of All Apologies.
So she's incredible. That was Sinead O'Connor covering All Apologies by Nirvana.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So on to the next order of business.
So what are you what are you planning to do for this weekend, Casey?
Starting this weekend, myself and the other delegates that we elected from the Capital District DSA, as well as many, many other delegates across the nation, will be attending the DSA's biennial national convention. We expect to hear a lot of very knowledgeable members. The keynote speaker will be Rashida Tlaib, which I'm so excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a DSA member listening in, call us. Oh, also shout out to DSA member Adrian, who was messaging me saying that they are enjoying the episode. So thank you, Adrian. We love you and happy almost birthday.
Did you pick up the phone? It was ringing.
Oh, I didn't. Is it ringing still? Oh, hello?
Uh-huh, very good.
I don't like to talk about things that might be controversial. I don't want to talk about things that will annoy the kakistocracy to the extent that the possibility of their objectives might not be commiserate to the form and philosophy that most of us do endure. It was Proudhon who did write The Philosophy of Poverty. Well, there was another man who wrote a book, and his book was The Poverty of Philosophy. Now, that's one thing that I don't want to talk about. And then there's another subject. We can't talk about sports. So I think baseball is out. But what we will discuss is music, religion, and politics, because I think these are things that we can come to some common conclusion, rather than to abate those who feel regulated by osmosis to concern themselves to the areas provided by those who have succumbed to this mortal obligation, which is known to develop some facade. The first words in the great book says, in the beginning, there was two out. I think that the Indianapolis 500 were all innocent, although many people object to that particular quick conclusion. This is another thing that I wanted to bring out. You can't have a third party in the United States as long as you have one party operating under two different names. So therefore, the two parties have negated each other, and therefore the country became finally unified in New York City. Because we have the police department under the direction of the one party, which we don't know its name, and therefore causing us to feel protected up there. If you go to New York, I tell you a lot of things that are strange. You can ride the subway in New York for 75 cents. There's a sign in the subway that says, if you spit on the subway floor, you're liable to a $500 fine, a year in prison, or both. But if you vomit, you get away with everything. You could vomit for nothing in New York. So if you ever spit on the subway floor, put a little vomit on top. Let the police go around looking for that. And therefore, our country did endure. Yes, there it was, not slightly behind the times, but definitely of paramount importance, that brought about those who feel that they have to bequeath any loyalty to the magnanimous gesture made by those who have been captivated long, long before our country has any durability. So I think that your constant refusal to accept that which would be considered magnanimous, to leave out the budget cutting, the budget cuts that... Those of you, we said, who make $50,000 a year are only going to spend $200 on taxes. Those that make $5,000 a year are going to pay $2,000 a year taxes. They figured it's a sliding scale. I mean, that's the way it's going to be, because there are more people that make less than there are that make more. So I think, even as Ezekiel said, and Jeremiah, and Malachi, and Ecclesiastes, and Revelation said that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Let's face it, the rich can't get richer unless the poor get poorer. So if we take it from the poor before the rich get it, we don't have to worry about anything. We got that money right from the beginning. So that's one way to get money. And then another way to get money, cut out music, cut out dancing. First thing you know, it'll lead to drinking and smoking. That's why Baptists are great. And a lot of Baptists, they don't fornicate standing up because God will think they're dancing. So my philosophy is to you people, don't earn more than you could spend. But spend more than you earn. I mean, say you die at 75 and you owe $300,000. To amortize that loan at $30,000 a year would take you, with accrued interest, 18 years to pay it off. So you actually live to be 93, because you're living on money you would have made if you lived that long. So my suggestion to you is to borrow to attain this affluent position. Borrow, borrow. Start with your friends. Borrow from your friends. And when they ain't got any more money, make new friends. But keep borrowing. Borrowing is the thing that will bring about the joy of whatever experiences one can endeavor. Now, one of the causes of the downfall of Chicago as a metropolis, the cows got drunk, they burnt up the place, and Chicago is known as the Windy City. It comes from the fact that music started, jazz started, where sometimes you hear a clarinet would team up with a brunette and they would go flat together in the lower registers. This flatness, or flatulence, made Chicago the famous Windy City. So you can see that there is a reason for giving names to various areas which are part and parcel. Just as our former president and present president have both said, not yet in conjunction, but when they said, we got to unite the country. What my suggestion would be to get rid of Montana, South and North Dakota, Arkansas, and the other thing right down the middle. And with all that land expropriated, we can squeeze the country together, and to unite it would be more of a victory of geography rather than a political persuasion. This concludes this seminar for this evening. However, we do hope that due to extenuating circumstances, this is only a moment and just a bridge in that gap that will soon hurdle these obstacles and go forward behind the vanguard into the future. And I feel that with your help, we can minimize the destruction that the forces of evil have developed in a serene and applicable territory.
Casey, do you know who that was?
I know who it is because of the name is in front of me, but I will say when I first started listening to it, it reminded me of Ludwig von Drake, who was a duck from the wonderful world of Disney that I grew up listening to, because there was a song about the color spectrum that went like, red, yellow, green, red, blue, 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 red, purple, green, yellow, orange, red, red. And he sounds just like that duck.
Well, that's Professor Irwin Corey, the foremost authority. Okay, and he was one of those comics in the 40s and 50s and 60s and even the 70s.
I love him, yeah.
And, of course, yeah, you figured that out, right? So his shtick was to portray this very absent-minded professor who said all of these things, very obtuse. You can see he had a lot to say about Chicago, which is where you're going this weekend. I put that in there, very special. He was born in Brooklyn, born in 1914, died at 102. I did not know this till I looked him up. He was born in an orphanage, rode boxcars during the Depression. He went from job to job, but he was a leftist. He was a member of the ILGWU. He would put on comedy shows when the unions had that kind of cultural thing behind them back in the day.
That's so fun.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, he was always on the Mike Douglas show. He was on all of those terrific shows.
I love him.
After he retired, he lived in Upper Manhattan. And he would go panhandling from cars. And he looked like a homeless old guy, though he was Professor Irwin Corey. But the money that he got from panhandling from cars, he would send to a children's hospital in Cuba. He was a staunch supporter of Cuba.
That's so cool. Mm-hmm. Wow. What a delight.
And also, he was open for birthday parties. So I figure that if you were a dad and you got your kid to have his at his birthday entertainment of Professor Irwin Corey, I think you're probably the coolest dad that ever lived.
Was he a like very famous like across the nation?
Oh yeah. Oh no. He was on the Tonight Show occasionally.
Oh wow. So how cool. What a joy.
Okay. So in honor of Professor Irwin Corey's association with the ILGWU, I'm going to play an advert for when unions actually advertised on television from those days, let's say the days of the Patco strike.
All right.
When we didn't have the International Ladies' Garment Workers Union, we didn't know from day to day whether we had a job or not.
It was a hard way to live.
That's why we worked to get the union. We need something to count on.
We're working fair hours for fair pay now.
The ILG gives us a chance to better ourselves and our kids.
That's our union.
And that's what our label stands for.
Look for the union label.
When you are buying a coat, dress, or ball.
Yep, that was on TV a lot back in the day.
The jingle, the song is so beautiful.
That's a great song. It was actually very memorable. I wonder who wrote it. I imagine it would be probably a union songwriter.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting to me, like from a textile perspective, that when I look through my grandmother's clothes and my mom's clothing and like going thrifting and stuff, so many garments have like union made on the inside, and that's mm-hmm. just not a thing anymore, obviously, because of just like the rise of fast fashion. But it would be like a pretty interesting selling point. Like, I wonder if that can be brought back. I would hope so. I'm sure it's still happening, just not on my radar.
If I went through my mom's closet and I said I was going thrifting, she would hit me so hard.
Oh, no, not two separate things. I'm not thrifting my mom's closet.
I would get such a smack.
Although I have taken a number of my grandmother's items of clothing. And Matt's grandmother, she died a couple years ago, RIP. But she was very... wanted the finer things mm-hmm. like as a play in society, because she was an immigrant who didn't speak English super well, and so she just had like the finest clothing mm-hmm. and she got everything tailored, like everything was tailored to her exact specifications, and they were my exact specifications.
That's terrific.
It was what a joy. Well, I went there when she was still alive, and she was like, go shopping in my closet. And I found the most incredible items mm-hmm. that were just exact height, length. It was crazy. Anyway, but beautiful, beautiful, mm-hmm. beautiful. That were all mainly
union made. Union made. All right. Shall we take a little musical break?
Let's do it.
It's going to be completely out of context.
Great.
Blue-eyed girl, she said no more, and that blue-eyed girl.
Are you still there? Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
Okay. So maybe this is the talk about Zohran section of the show.
10 minutes left. Let's do it.
All right. So, of course, all of the moneyed interests are thinking that the sky was going to fall if Zohran becomes mayor. Oh, God forbid we have a socialist mayor. But, you know, he was not the first socialist mayor of New York City.
No, he was not.
Fiorello LaGuardia. And I used to live down on Bleecker Street, and on LaGuardia Place, just northwards of Bleecker Street, there is a statue to Fiorello LaGuardia. He's got his hands out there as if he's telling you how big a fish he caught over the weekend. he was a person who professed being a socialist, but he was also a Republican. So that goes to show you how flexible identities can and names can be at times.
He's definitely one of the most regarded mayors in New York City history.
Now, I know Fiorello LaGuardia. I know that he was well regarded, but I know him historically mostly because when there was a newspaper delivery strike back in the 40s or 45 or something like that, the delivery boys for the newspaper, not the delivery boys, but the delivery services for the newspapers went on strike. And so he promoted this idea that rather than have the kids suffer without seeing the funny pages, and he would read the funny pages over the radio, which I'm sure our handlers at WGXC would appreciate.
Do you know the musical The Newsies? Or Newsies?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. I think Christian Bale was in it.
He was, and that musical is based on... Oh, wait, no. It's definitely...
It was a Disney production, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a 1900 Newsboy strike.
Uh-huh. That's a bit earlier.
But LaGuardia is a character in that musical.
Is he? He's also the subject of a musical.
Oh, I think he's the future mayor. Ah.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. So I don't think I've ever seen Newsies. I guess I should.
Oh my gosh. It's a joy. It is a joy. Yeah. I haven't seen it in a very long time. I saw it as a child, but I've definitely and then it had a revival on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Some point in the past 10 years. But yeah, it's just a delight.
I am going to play. Well, okay, we could play a song from Fiorello, the musical, which is titled Unfair, right? About a seamstress's strike in New York City. Or we could play, since his time is tight tonight, we could play LaGuardia reading a Dick Tracy comic. Which would you prefer?
Oh, I don't know. Because do we want more music or do we want more talk?
It's not a great song.
All right, let's do the comic.
Okay. I kind of wheedled you into that, didn't I?
Not at all.
What Dick Tracy is doing. Now, you remember, and we hear wet wash. Listen, baby, I know you're a maid at Van Hoon's. I saw you there last week, and I know there's something phony about that dough. Now, when we get it, it's going to be 50-50, okay? Then maybe you'd like some more of your laundry torn to pieces. She's ripping her laundry there and made a little delicate piece of lingerie. Now, get this picture. There is wet wash. The doors of the laundry wagon are open. He's leaning with his back toward the wagon. And he's counting his money. 2, 3, 4,000. And the picture is a hand of breathless stretching out. She's got hold of that iron pot. Remember the iron pot she took from the Van Hoosen's gardener's flat to put the money in? And crash! She crashes it on its head. Knocked out. And say, children, what does it all mean? It means that dirty money never brings any luck. No, dirty money always brings sorrow and sadness and misery and disgrace.
That's a little eulogizing there, or moralizing there from Fiorella LaGuardia about dirty money. But there you go.
I feel like I need to listen to that on my own time.
Okay.
Really get the most of it.
I got it from the, Smithsonian Archives.
Oh, cool. What, do you know what year that's from?
That would be probably from the newspaper strike in 1945, 46. You know, everybody thinks that when everybody came back from World War II, that everything was hunky-dory and we went immediately to breaking, you know, to solving all the economic problems, but that wasn't the way it was. There was a lot of economic upheaval still going on when the GIs came back from World War II.
Yeah, for sure.
But LaGuardia was good. Here's a little thing about, I mean, he had help from the federal government. He was really given a lot of money from the Works Project Administration by FDR.
Oh, I see. 1934, he came into office.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say, wow, so he was mayor for a long time.
Yep. He was a popular guy.
Yeah. Was he the longest serving mayor, I wonder?
That I don't know.
Let's quickly Google it. It was LaGuardia.
Oh, wow.
34 to 45.
Okay.
Excuse me. So followed by Wagner, mm-hmm. Koch, and Bloomberg.
Okay. So he's got a statue. Peter Stuyvesant has a statue, which is terrible. Imagine coming to work every day to see that guy with a peg leg and a patch over one eye. My God.
I think I need to learn more about New York City mayoral history because I know Jack right now.
Okay.
Beyond when I lived there, which was basically Bloomberg, de Blasio, and Adams.
Okay, we got 3 minutes left
of
the show.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. What do we do?
You wanted to hear Bonnie by Prefab Sprout. I'm going to play it as our outro. What do you say to that?
You have my full support.
Okie dokie.
Oh, but also, thank you, comrades. We forgot about that.
Yes.
Tune in 7 p.m. next month, September 2nd, the day after Labor Day. Speaking of labor today.
That's right.
Yeah. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Bill?
Let me see. What could I add to the show tonight? If you're interested in joining DSA, you can find out more at dsausa.org. Where you'll find the many levels of membership to comport with whatever finances you have, or you may find out more at capitaldistrictdsa.org.
Indeed.
And
there are two types of organizations for social change, one that rely upon members' dues, another that rely upon donations. DSA is the dues-reliant type, so we don't spend our time hustling for donations, but rather depend upon winning people to our ranks with ideas. So with that, back to Prefab. I count the hours since you slipped away. I count the hours that I lie awake. I count the minutes and the seconds too. Don't hold you, broken soldiers.